On the order of meeting of check, Wednesday, November 15th, 4:06. Thank you. We had a couple important things to press, I think, several important things to go over tonight. So I'm going to tell you, we may only get past the first item. If we only get past the first item, that's okay. We'll pick up the next items in January. So we're going to talk about the first item, which I am sure you were so thrilled to see on the agenda. And so this is our agenda for this evening. And so remember, we ended the year last year with the discussion of the instructional materials regarding child abuse, family violence, dating violence, and sex trafficking. So SHAC gets to decide the appropriate level and the appropriate content for each grade level in regards to that content. And then we will give you a short presentation over different types of services we have. I don't expect us to get to the wellness plan, but we'll just see and see where we go and see then what we have for homework in January. State legislature, of course, passed many things this summer. I gave you a heads up at the end of the last meeting that we would start to receive our legal requirements in regards to many of those things that we already have started. We received the update from the Texas Association of School Boards this week. And so first read will go to our board in December. And there are a couple things in there for SHAC that the state has said we have to do. And so we'll address those things at the January meeting. So at our January meeting, there is some expanded requirements for us and some more depth, for instance, into fentanyl awareness and some other drug awareness that we'll talk about. But our first, we don't have any public comments. We always just leave that. I didn't have on the agenda there. First thing is our discussion of the child abuse instructional materials, in particular and related to pre-K. So last year, when we had all of our discussion around the child abuse prevention and the family violence materials, we really focused on K-8, really K-12, but remember we chose Play It Safe for K-8. Coming into this year, one of the things that was brought to our attention recently was that because pre-kindergarten 4 is required for every district across the state, that SHAC really should have, and we have pre-kindergarten 3, that SHAC should have a discussion around pre-kindergarten and whether or not we feel it is developmentally appropriate and or what materials should be used. And so what I've been doing over the last several weeks is working with some different groups of people around this topic so I can bring you some feedback from different groups as we go to talk about it. So if you'll remember, for K-8, we chose Play It Safe, and we watched all the variety of videos. And so there is a video for pre-kindergarten. And so the pre-kindergarten video, what we did is we watched the preview to the pre-kindergarten video with all of the counselors, K-12, with then Caitlin Puckett, our social worker, also in the room. And then we had a discussion of pre-K-3 and pre-K-4. And we had the same discussion with a couple other different groups of people. In talking to the counselors around pre-K, so remember pre-K-4, the kids have to turn 4 by September 1st. Pre-K-3, they have to turn 3 by September 1st. And I can, I believe the sound will work, so I can show you the preview for pre-K. And we do have Erica here this evening. What the counselors were recommending to you all, so, and keep in mind, we can't make a final, let me just preface, we cannot make a final decision tonight. Because we are, if we decided, or what we decide, if we decide to add an instructional material, we'll have to have like the two hearings and the things, and then it goes to the board. And so what we just need to know is as far as moving forward or not. After talking to the counselors, what was discussed was the recommendation from the counseling team, it would be that we would use the Play It Safe pre-K curriculum with pre-K 4, only with pre-K 4. The pre-K 4 guidelines talk about having discussions with kids around boundaries. And so we felt like this fit right in with the pre-K 4 guidelines. The pre-K 3 guidelines are not necessarily in that way. They felt like in the spring of pre-K that those pre-K 4s who could be 5 or almost 5 developmentally are ready to be able to take in that information, that they would understand the TikTok the dog video, that's for pre-kindergarten, and that emphasizes the, you know, the types of touch. And so they felt like their recommendation was to stay consistent through everything, that it would be developmentally appropriate to do play it safe beginning with pre-K 4 and up. Our counseling team did not feel like that implementing play it safe with the 3-year-olds, that was not their recommendation. So it was a different recommendation for 3. We choose to have pre-K 3 here. Pre-K 4 is required across the state. And so in their discussion around that, if you'll keep in mind that the part of their discussion, and mainly leaning on elementary counselors and people that had expertise in early childhood, was that the, you know, September 1st, several of them are just barely 3, and so they're turning 4 throughout that year, and they really felt like that if Shackwood wanted to have something specific, that really it would be the counselor going into the classroom and just having a general little bitty guidance type lesson around, you know, if you don't want somebody touching your hair, they shouldn't touch your hair. And even if it's a teacher that's touching your hair, or we have a little book that they had kind of looked through, but they really, they felt like they were in consensus on play it safe to start with pre-K 4 up for consistency. And the counseling team did feel like that it was developmentally appropriate to begin in pre-K 4. They have seen some things in pre-K 4 where they believe that it would be helpful to implement it in pre-K 4. It would still require all of the same parent permissions, the opt-ins and all of that, that is required for K-8. Erica, do you want to describe the pre-K video a little more? I mean, I can show the, you want me to show the little preview?
I can show the whole video as well.
How long is it?
It's probably about 10 minutes.
It's only 10 minutes.
Through it, that way you can see it and it's fully transparent.
So we can show that. Do you want to see a little pre-K video? We can get on. It's a much shortened version than what they show in kindergarten, because if you can imagine, 4-year-olds can only sit for so long. They really can only sit for so long. The 3-year-olds just, they can't even grasp some of the concept. I didn't know what your thoughts were in regards to how the counselors, they kind of separated that 3 and that 4.
I do think that I see where they're coming from with that, and for sure. Unfortunately, we do see 2 and 3-year-olds coming in and interviewing for sexual abuse, being victims of that. So having the conversation with them, I think, is important. It doesn't have to be necessarily through the curriculum, but just understanding that no one has the right to do that, because kids don't understand if we're telling them they need to listen to an adult and do whatever they're asking. That's a gray area. They don't really quite understand that. So we have to teach them that.
So when we called and surveyed other districts, and particularly talked to other districts that used Play It Safe, everybody I called stated they used Play It Safe with their pre-kindergarten 4. And almost everybody I called stated they did something different for pre-K 3 because of developmentally, which was interesting to us. And for some of the same reasons. People that did not use Play It Safe, some of them were not doing then anything in pre-K 4 at all, nor anything in pre-K 3. And what they had was a much looser program, not a steady, you know, program that builds upon itself through the grades like we chose for Play It Safe. The division there, though, I saw when I gathered information from other systems, and I can send that out to Shaq. Like, this district does this in pre-K from who we called. I didn't know, do you have places you go to for pre-K 4 right now?
Yes, so I do, and what I would suggest is not necessarily having someone come in and teach a whole curriculum to pre-K 3, but maybe show the video and then show it again to pre-K 4.
Do something short.
Because they're really not going to remember it.
No. Yeah.
But the ones who are going through something are definitely going to remember it. And they're gonna see. Those are the ones that we're trying to get to, is the ones that are having dysfunction at home or having someone that is touching them inappropriately. It's not necessarily for the kids that have healthy boundaries at home. It's just going to go over their head. But we want to let those kids know that what's happening at home is not okay. They need to go and tell somebody. So
I know we watched the other videos last year. The pre-K 3 one is pretty short. Do you want to see it? I mean, the pre-K 4 one. Pre-K is pretty short. Do y'all want to see it?
Sure. Oh, I see it, I got it. You want me, are you able to just log in on the computer back here? And hopefully the sound is gonna work, so we'll get that. Thank you for letting me put you on the spot today.
No, you're okay.
Sorry I sound like this too, I've been teaching for 2 days straight, so it's very hoarse today.
We may have to just check, hopefully the sound will check.
Yarda, I have a quick question.
Yes, ma'am.
Do we have pre-K 3 kids that are still in diapers?
It is possible that occasionally we might have a pre-K 3 kid that is still in a diaper. We have a lot of effort towards potty training. They really would be in a pull-up, not a diaper. And we have potty training guidelines,
okay,
in which if a student has numerous accidents, then we have a meeting with a designated group of people with the parent to come up with a plan. And the purpose of the plan is that we're gonna do this in school and you're gonna do this at home. But keep in mind, we have pre-K 4 kids that come in that still need potty training right now. And across the district, we do have several kindergartners that we've had to work with potty training. I consider us fortunate because I've talked to people from some other larger systems, and they're still potty training some first and second graders who had been kept home throughout COVID. And so nothing had been really done at home. It's not that there's a delay, a cognitive delay or something. We have very few kindergartners, and then working with pre-K 4, and then pre-K 3. We can't exclude them from pre-K based on if they're not potty trained, but we do allow, if there's an instance where we're just having so many accidents, then we kind of go back to like, let's put on the pull up and work from there. Does that answer what you need?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
So yes, so the pre-K video?
Yes.
The counselor said 4-year-old, almost 5-year-old, I can handle that. 3-year-old just would rather have more of a conversation discussion. This would require parent permission, just like we already have a place for the others. In the room when we had the discussion was Mr. Teets and Ms. Puckett and Ms. O'Connor. Weren't you in the room also when we were having the discussion? Don't know what other comments you all have to about how we talked about it and what everybody was recommending.
I have anything else?
I think you covered most of it. I mean, using the books for some of it to address some issues, but just age appropriateness between 3 and 4 years, you already discussed.
Yeah, I don't want anybody to think that they weren't saying that they were saying that the content's not important, because we absolutely
for 3 year olds, correct,
right? We're absolutely saying that the content is important for 3 year olds as well as 4 year olds, but that it would be better in the context of the counselor going into the classroom and getting it. There is a book that we all looked at that touches on most of these things, including saying no to an adult, private parts are under a bathing suit, things like that. And I guess what we decide here would kind of dictate where we go on that front. But
how long was the video?
8 minutes, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Felt long.
We'll go back and check the exact time.
It's quite long.
So if we were to have, did you press?
I did.
If we were to have the Do Play It Safe and pre-kindergarten, it would be that we would have the advocacy center also fit in pre-kindergarten within there. So the advocacy center then would be presenting to the students from pre-K 4 all the way up. So really what we wanted to bring to you this evening is if we wanted to move forward on adding in with pre-kindergarten, if we feel it's developmentally appropriate as a shack to put in particular pre-kindergarten 4 right here, adding pre-kindergarten 4 and then starting the process where we have to have some open meetings and different things, and then we have to take it to the board to be able to do it the right way. So even though we already have it, really to do it the right way, we need to do the hearings and then take it to the board for approval to add with pre-kindergarten. What are some thoughts that you will have?
Mm-hmm.
I know you missed the video. We were talking about that, starting the child abuse videos at pre-kindergarten four. So the ones that are four, almost five, the counselors met and had some discussion about that. They felt like a conversation or a counseling lesson with the three-year-olds would be better than the video, kind of breaking out, but bringing on Play It Safe for pre-kindergarten four. Do we want to move forward to get parent feedback, just to start to have a forums and get parent feedback, and then we, after we have some parent feedback, then we see where we're at as a recommendation? Or is there a feeling in here that it's not appropriate and we don't want to move forward? I guess that's really what I need to know.
I thought it was a good video.
Yeah. Yeah. Good video.
The parents.
All animated. I mean, it's it is different than what is kindergarten. So start to go ahead and move forward.
Yep.
Okay. And so we're going to then revisit at our January meeting. We'll revisit our January meeting. I'll look at when our January meeting is again. And then I'll kind of do out the timeline for us. And it may be that we have to book the Advocacy Center to come at a different time for pre-kindergarten from when they're coming for the other ones this year, just based on us getting board approval and following the appropriate timeline. And then what we'll also do is we do have a book that we had talked about. Caitlin, do you want to go get the book? And then I'll go to the next thing. Caitlin's going to go get the book. They're right outside my office.
Oh, I have still one on my
desk. Oh, you still have one on your desk? Okay. Well, that way you can get several copies outside my office.
Oh, okay.
So she'll bring over the book. There was a book that came with some of our pre-kindergarten materials that we pulled out that we thought would be good to use as a basis for the conversation for you all to look through. So we have several of those copies that you all can see. So I'll go on to the next thing, and then when she gets back with the books, we'll pick up with that. So I'll develop the timeline, and we'll talk about where we're going to move with that in regards to Play It Safe for four-year-olds. Let me go back to our presentation. So we had a couple things just to review today that we're going to review in regards to services. So we're going to review our student health services just a little bit. As you may or may not know, we have RNs at most all of our campuses. We do have an LVN at one of our campuses. And most recently, we do have an opening at Highland Lakes Elementary for an RN position. And so we have an LVN at Colt Elementary. We have RNs at our other campuses with the opening at Highland Lakes Elementary that just happened this week. And then we have an RN within special education that serves students at Colt Elementary, and we have an LVN for special education that serves really our early childhood special education unit at Marble Falls Elementary. Part of our student health services team is also the athletic trainers. So we have Doc Harrington at the middle school, and then we have Stephanie and Brandon at the high school. Brandon Belk also assists us with all of our CPR training for employees throughout the district. And so they're also considered part of our health services staff. As far as what student health services entails, if we just go to board policy, it's one of the easiest ways to see just the scope of everything that it entails. So everything from wellness and checking on doing very specific physical exams, all the way down to, they also are included in mental health, a lot of their stuff stops right here with care plans. Well, in just a second. I'll do this first. So when we talk about wellness and health services, the physical examination. So as you know, or may not know, we're required by the state to do vision and hearing screenings, which was difficult during COVID because the state stopped giving the training for people to get certified, but they still expected us to complete all the vision and hearing screenings. And so all of our nurses are certified to be able to give vision and hearing screenings. Also, I can never say the name, but acanthosis, of course it never left the room, right? Acanthosis for under diabetes, and spinal screenings, required to do spinal screenings in addition. And so there are some physical examinations that they have to do that are required by the state. We send a letter to the parents letting them know that that's going to come up. A parent can deny the screening if they wish to. We have very few parents that deny the screening. It's a screening, and then if the nurse notices something, For instance, on the spinal screening, there's a lot of privacy that we have embedded to be able to do the spinal screenings. If something then is noticed, then we give the parent a letter stating that they probably need to follow up with the doctor. Same on vision and hearing. On hearing, though, a lot of times if a child fails the hearing screening, we'll wait a week and then we'll screen them again. And we do that because they could have an ear infection or a cold or something that kind of interfered with that first time. And so then we'll wait a week and then do it again. And then if they failed a second time, then we give the parent a letter recommending. Several of our nurses belong to the National Association of School Nurses. So when we have students who fail the vision hearing that are not on any type of insurance or not any type of state care, we are able to offer some vouchers for them to be able to get free glasses. There is even one of the optometrists here in Marble Falls, a lot of times he will give two pairs of glasses, one for home and one for school, because sometimes they end up breaking or misplacing. Immunizations, there is, you know, statute for the state of Texas that in order to come to school, you need to have certain immunizations or you need to have a waiver in place. We don't just take that the parent says, here, I completed the waiver today. No, you have to have the waiver approved and bring us the approval waiver. Our nurses send out the letters, make sure everybody is immunized. We're not talking about flu and COVID. We're talking about polio and chickenpox. All of those require. We don't have any control over what the state requires for immunizations. We have a chart on what people are required to have done. If kids come to us in seventh grade and they've never been immunized, then what we do is we follow a schedule that basically catches them up. And so then they have to just stay on schedule to be able to get caught up. You can't get, you know, 12 years worth of immunizations all at once. So there is a staged out schedule. And as long as they stick with the schedule, then we keep them enrolled. We can only enroll students who are fully follow all of the immunization requirements. The only exceptions would be if a student is homeless. There is a grace period for them to be able to get those immunizations so we can provisionally enroll them while they're getting their immunizations. A lot of seventh grade's a big year. And a lot of people, you know, go to start seventh grade, didn't go get your kids shots. And so first day of school, we have to say, go back home. You should have gotten the shots. Keep in mind, that's not the first time we've told them. Most likely we've told them five times before. We start notifying them in January of sixth grade. We give them more letters in May. We send emails, we send phone calls, we send letters home if they've not gotten it done. And so the first day of school is not the first time. We don't let them pick up their device if they don't have their immunizations done. They can't pick up their schedule. So there's lots of warnings that the parent has received. It's not the kid came to school and the parent never knew. Just so you know. Medical treatment. So our nurses, of course, provide medical treatment. If anybody is in a state of medical emergency, they're obligated to treat them. However, if Yarda goes in and Yarda wants, Donna Forrest to check Yarda out, Donna's gonna tell Yarda, the employee, like, hey, I'm gonna check you out, but if something comes up, I'm calling HR, your husband. Like, there's not really a HIPAA if an employee goes to a school nurse. We've had cases where like an employee has 104 fever and should be going to the hospital and they're like, no, I'm going back to class. And so the nurse is like, yeah, I'm getting the principal. Like, you're not going back to class. You're going to get the kids sick. But they are there to treat everybody. And so they do still medically treat the employee. We've had them call spouses before it come up, but really they're there to treat kids. They can't just give the kids out over-the-counter medication. But like in my case where my kid would have migraines, I could, you know, in the original bottle with a signed form from me, I could keep Tylenol in the clinic, and then my child, if he had a headache, he could go to the clinic, and then the nurse could administer Tylenol. Any sort of other medication, prescription medication has to be in the original bottle. One misconception that happens quite a bit is the fact that people will say, you know, well, I only have the one original bottle, I'm not willing to give it up. If you actually tell HEB that you need to have, or any of the pharmacies, Atkins, Walgreens, CVS, you tell any of them that you need to have an original bottle at school also, they'll split it into two bottles. So then you have an original bottle at school and an original bottle at home. Many parents don't know that you can just ask that. Other things, for instance, we do have, you know, EpiPens outside the nurse offices. The nurses have some students' EpiPens within their offices that are personal. Inhalers, and EpiPens, inhalers, and then of course Narcan. We have standing orders for the nurses to be able to use certain types of over-the-counter stuff, but it's not like Tylenol and Advil. It's like eye drops and remember like Benadryl cream. It's very basic over-the-counter first aid treatment is what they're allowed to use. Communicable diseases, they have to watch out and see if anything comes in or if they suspect that a student has a disease that's on the chart from DSHS, and then we exclude, we look for things. Keep in mind, you know, if a student is sick, we do, if they're vomiting or if they have fever, they need to be fever-free or vomiting-free or diarrhea-free for a certain number of hours. DSHS says 24 hours. Normal Falls ISD says 36. Here's why we say 36. We send your kid at home at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday. We don't want you bringing them back at 11 o'clock on Wednesday. We send them home. They really should be out the rest of Tuesday and all day Wednesday. That's why we say 36. The intention is that they're out the whole next day. Some people are very literal. You said 24 hours. I'm bringing my kid back at 11 o'clock. We do have to report diseases. In case you're wondering, when we report diseases, we call Dr. Madrigal, and then we also report to USHS. There are certain diseases that require a school-wide letter, so then Dr. Gassaway is involved. Dr. Gassaway is notifying the Board of Trustees that we're fixing to send a letter out at such and such school because this disease is there and DSHS requires us to send a letter. So they track all of that. They also develop care plans, so numerous students in special education have care plans. The nurses develop those care plans based on what those needs are. The other thing, though, is they have to have a seizure action plan, an asthma action plan. There are several different plans depending on a food allergy plan for a student, plans for different things that students have. And then I think I skipped it, but medication is probably the most, I thought I had it on there, but I guess I didn't. Medication is, it's one of the most time-consuming parts that they take care of. They actually have to do a pill count weekly to make sure that they have the appropriate number of pills left if a student's on a prescription medication, so we have quality control within there. There's certain medications that are locked up in certain cabinets depending if they're narcotic or not narcotic, and so medication management is it's very important that we have somebody educated over that. We're going to skip back to the book, so let's go back to pre-K. So going back to pre-K, this is the book that that the counselors had stated that for pre-K 3, they wanted to use where they come in and they do a lesson. They read the book and they do the conversation with the students instead of showing a play it safe. You saw it already, so let's see. Instead of, I guess if y'all could share and then sure. Take it there. Instead of doing a play it safe video, that it would be a conversation and working with this book. So if y'all want to take a second, read through the book, give us your thoughts on the book. There are other options that we could also look at. This is a book that did come with our early childhood materials that we thought could be an option for us for pre-K 3. And every counselor in the district from elementary all the way through high school read the book and gave feedback and talked about it. Thank you. would not be one book per child. This is a read aloud with the counselor coming into the room, and the teacher being within there also.
So on the purple book, we talked a lot about how important it was that it identifies that they can say no to an adult, and the reasons that they can say no to an adult. We thought it was more age appropriate, being that it's already kind of a part of their early childhood materials that they've received, and the counselor can come in and have a discussion. I think what's important is that it doesn't mean that the counselor is only going to say the words on those pages. It just provides a good, a good consistent kind of foundation for them to have that conversation from. So if there's something specific that anybody's concerned about that's not in it, that's something that the counselor can certainly say out loud. They felt like it was just gonna be more developmentally appropriate for those three-year-olds, and that they would be able to have a better understanding. And it outlines the adult saying, if saying no to an adult, it talks about the private areas in your bathing suit, which we thought was important and consistent with play and safe as well. But kind of scales it back a little bit for those three-year-olds.
I think the other part is that we also stated that we would want to seek parent permission for pre-K through.
Yes.
Because of, in particular, due to some of the consistent messaging from Play It Safe, we felt that it's not just a conversation that would fall without parent permission, that it does fall within the law for the parent permission in regards to there. So what are y'all's thoughts on, what are your thoughts on the book, or your thoughts on pre-K three? Is your thought that, Shaq technically has the governance to say not appropriate for pre-K three, the discussion at all. We have the leeway to kind of have the discussions on what we would like. You said you wanted to move forward pre-K four, play it safe. If someone has a strong opinion on play it, showing that same video to the three-year-olds. What are your thoughts on the book with the counselors coming in?
I like that.
Yeah, that sounds appropriate.
Okay. Parent permission too. Are we in consensus on that? Yes. That's where the counselors and where Caitlin stood was the parent permission for it, because it does cover those same topics.
The one thing I like about the video that I think the counselor could easily add to the book is how they explain in the video what a private part is, and talk about it being, the area you're covered by your bathing suit. And in the book, it doesn't explicitly say that. And so I think for a three-year-old, that would be something you'd want to explain.
It does?
I just read it.
I missed
one
too,
page.
Sorry,
I looked for it explicitly.
And I apologize if I missed this, but
no, it's on there.
On these lists, like, is this like a one time that the counselor comes in?
This is one of the times
for pre-K
come in
four.
This is the time they come in to do this.
This is where she says.
Okay, so the video is like a one time lesson with pre-K four. The book
line.
Is one time pre-K three.
I missed it,
but it falls in line really well with all of the boundary lessons that the pre-K teachers are doing.
Correct. There are other boundary lessons the pre-K teachers do, like you need to ask to pet somebody's pet. You need to be nice to other people. Don't kick other people. You shouldn't be hitting other people. Remember, these are little ones that, you shouldn't be stomping on other people. You shouldn't be pushing other people. And so it does, it's the same book that falls, it's in the same series that falls along with other lessons the teacher is doing. So yes, I'm moving forward with both of those things then with what we have. Okay. So I will, like I said, put together a timeline. I'll send it out to you all for you to give me some feedback. And then we'll talk about if Erica, if we will be able to meet for when she's already scheduled, or if we'll have to talk about her just coming later for this spring to come back to do the pre-K, which might be what's needed based on how we see forward. I think we have time to get to one more item, if you're okay. We have planned for Caitlin Puckett, our social worker, to share about pregnancy-related services, and then we can pick up the other things. I guess if you could go ahead and talk about how many students we have right now, Some people have asked why. Why?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay, so currently we do have 4 students that are pregnant in our district. We have had a total of 6 who have graduated. We also have one that has a small child. We also had one that called me this week that you don't even know about, but seeking to enroll, that has a small child. They're trying to work out daycare issues before that. So this is a little bit higher of a number than we've seen in previous years. Part of that could be that we know about more of them than we have in previous years. There's also some cultural things to consider because several of them are Hispanic, and so that's just, there is a cultural component to that. Additionally, we all understand that Roe v. Wade was overturned, and so this is something that's coming out of that. It's a lot harder to access an abortion, quite frankly. And so we think that that is also what we're seeing, and the Pregnancy and Life Center has echoed that as well, because they service more than just Marble Falls ISD. So they're seeing that consistently, that teen pregnancies are higher, because the closest place that they can legally get an abortion is on average about 8 hours away, or a significant drive, even if it's not quite 8 hours. So that is just a rollover that we're seeing from all of those legislative changes. So it doesn't necessarily mean that we're doing anything wrong. It doesn't mean anything. I don't want to hit the panic button. I know that's the instinct when you hear the higher number. There are lots of factors at play in that number. So because of the higher numbers, and we had talked about this before we even knew we had higher numbers, we're trying to scale up the services that we're providing to our students that are pregnant. We can't just go from 0 to 100, so we're kind of scaling it up. The information that you have in front of you is what we're providing this year, which is, some of this is new. In fact, all of this that you'll see is new. It doesn't mean they haven't gotten the information, but we just created a more robust kind of process. So the top is the resource information that a student will get when they are identified as pregnant and confirmed. You know, we do have some students that tell us that they're pregnant and then turns out they're not. So we do try to confirm that before we start rolling out all this information. So once the counselor confirms that, I meet with the student and I give them this information. I also relay the same information to their parent, so that the parent has it as well. We're very lucky this year that all of the families are supportive and helpful. We don't have any angry families, which is kind of the best case scenario that I can ask for in working with the families. So they'll get this information. It's not exhaustive resource information. It's just kind of the basics that they might need to go from as they're walking through the first stages of finding out that they're pregnant. A resource that has restarted this year in the second page you'll see is the Head Start prenatal program. And we are highly recommending them for our students that are pregnant, because they will follow them throughout their pregnancy, help them prepare for parenthood. They'll help the entire family, not just the student who is pregnant. They'll help the father, grandparents, whoever is involved and will be involved in being a caregiver for the baby. They do monthly check-ins. They have a parent educator, support groups, fatherhood classes, and they also do the online parenting classes, and they actually use the same courses as the Pregnancy and Life Center. So it is very consistent across what all is being provided in our area. And because they are using the same courses as the Pregnancy and Life Center, the Pregnancy and Life Center has agreed to allow me to issue credit to the Baby Boutique for those that are participating in our prenatal program. So it closes the loop really nicely if the student agrees to enroll in the prenatal program.
Can you explain the Baby Boutique a little bit?
Yes, but I also forgot the biggest benefit of the prenatal program is that if a student enrolls in that and participates in it to completion, it guarantees them a child care spot in Head Start once they've delivered. So, of course, Head Start is free for anybody who's approved, but it's sometimes very hard to get a spot, but this guarantees them a spot. So it makes it much easier and much smoother transition. Of the 4 that are currently pregnant, I think 3 have agreed to enter the program. 1 parent hasn't answered me yet. And then the other one that just graduated, is also enrolling in the program. So they seem to be interested. Some of them, it's the parent that has told them that they're interested, which is, I'm good with that too. Whatever gets them in the program, because it is really beneficial. So yes, I can issue credit to the Baby Boutique for the courses that students finish that are enrolled in this course through rec courses. So the Baby Boutique at the Pregnancy and Life Center is a room full of baby items. And they have everything from cribs, car seats, clothing, diapers, wipes, I mean, really anything other than formula, and sometimes they have formula, but Head Start can provide formula as well. Really, if a student enrolls in the program early and works on the courses and gets credit, realistically, they could walk out with a nursery full of items before the baby's even born. So it really is to their benefit on a number of levels. So the Pregnancy and Life Center allowing us to do that really closes that loop for them. So it could be a really great opportunity for students to participate, which is why we're highly encouraging it, because it really does help them along all fronts. Most importantly, helping them learn how to take care of their baby once the baby's born.
And they earn everything, so it's more like a hand up instead of a hand out, because they're earning it.
Yeah, so the last page you'll see is the price list. For every course that a student completes on Bright Courses, they get $5 in credit, and for every homework that they complete, they get $5 in credit. The Head Start prenatal program does have to confirm that they've completed it, which is that third sheet that you'll see that's just the completion log, which I created to mimic what the Pregnancy and Life Center uses for their clients. So the price list you'll see, a crib is $50 with a week credit. That's 5 classes and 5 homeworks. That's it. And you get a crib with a mattress and with bed and room. So it is really attainable, which is important to us as well. If the student is savvy and figures it out, they can do the prenatal program and double on top of it with the Pregnancy and Life Center and get double credit. That's up to them. That's their choice once they walk through the doors of the Pregnancy and Life Center. But, I mean, if they figure that out, they can really get a lot of credit for some of the things that they're doing. So it's just a great opportunity. Dads can also participate in that. If dads complete courses, they'll get credit too, and they can use that. If grandparents complete courses, they'll get credit too, and they can shop in the boutique. So really ramping up what we're providing, and then looking at 24-25 school year, having an even more robust plan in place for our students that are pregnant.
Caitlin checks in with our families right now, as well as the school nurse and the and their counselor. After the student delivers the baby, they receive 6 weeks of homebound instruction, and so the state requires us to do that. It's called CHI. So we have a certified teacher then that we hire that goes out to that home for 4 hours a week to serve the student. The student is considered then present for school. It counts for attendance. We have a log, and then they're able to keep up with their work. And we have teachers who volunteer to go out to their homes and to serve them that way. If a student has to go on bed rest before they have delivered, we gather all the appropriate documentation, and then we deploy the teacher out early, earlier than them delivering. And then we get the note after they've delivered to be able to continue to deploy the teacher for at least 6 weeks. If the doctor signs for 9 weeks or so, then that is, based on their medical need, that's what we sign. Unfortunately, we have had to have, last year, I had to have a difficult discussion with somebody, and that, you know, they, once they hit about 7 months, they just didn't want to come to school, and they told me it's uncomfortable, and I said, yeah, it's uncomfortable when you're pregnant. Your doctor hasn't signed off on a medical need, and you have to come to school. And until the doctor signed off on something, they come to school. But once they deliver, then we deploy the teacher out. And their doctors watch closely after them, and the school nurse, the counselor, in combination with Caitlin, if they think something is not going right, they'll contact the parents or figure out to get some help with them there. Stennis was out of town tonight, or he could have probably added a little bit more about the Pregnancy and Life Center, but he was out of town for today's meeting. Do y'all have any questions for Caitlin or the pregnancy-related services?
Yes. Is there a minimum age for Head Start?
For the child?
Yes.
You have to be 6 weeks, which, so CHI would get them through to that 6 week.
And then there would be childcare for the parent.
Yes, and then they do have to meet the certain requirements with Head Start. So as their child hits those milestones for immunizations and that, they have to have those immunizations to be able to stay in Head Start. And then Head Start provides wraparound services also for them. And so it's not just daycare, but it's also wraparound services for the parents and for that child. And make sure they stay up to date on their visit, on their examinations for the baby, on anything dental, on other things. Head Start just wrap around.
And a student can still apply for a Head Start spot for their child without participating in the program, but we're really, I don't want to say pushing, really hoping that a student would enroll in the program because it just makes that transition smoother. It does get a little bit more difficult if they wait until after they deliver and then tell us that they need a Head Start spot. It just makes it a little bit more challenging. So the hope is really that all of them would participate in this free program to them.
That they can benefit in many ways.
Yes, many ways. And then the child benefits. I mean, we said that's the whole point of Head Start. So it really sets the child up for success in the future.
Both children.
Both children.
The child in Head Start and the child that's still enrolled in school that we can get through school that we can keep in school.
Yes.
Other questions you'll have for Caitlin? Okay, that's our last item for today. I hope that was good information for you. Mr. Mumaw, you want to adjourn us?
All right, we'll adjourn at 5:33.
Thank you.